welcome you to another edition of Gateway to Baseball Heaven. I'm your host, Daniel Shuptel, C70 at the bat, at C70 on Twitter. And as you know by now, I'm always joined by Tara Wellman of Birdseeds, Birds on the Black, at Tara Wellman. Find her on Periscope. Pretty much any sort of medium that allows for visual communication, Tara is there. So, find her there. We have had it's not a good week. It's not the worst week we've ever seen, but it's not really one of the great ones. Before we get too far, and, you know, Tara and I had this long list of things we want to talk about tonight, but one thing that didn't make the list that we probably should touch on first is the passing of Red Shandies this week. You know, Red at 95 passed away on Wednesday. You know, one of the legends of Cardinal baseball that's been around forever, you know, almost literally the whole entire time the Cardinals have been a team. So it was tough to see him go, even though we kind of, you know, at 95, you're not too surprised when it comes.
Yeah, and he'd missed a couple of events where a lot of other Cardinals legends were lately. I believe he was not at opening day this year.
No.
Missed some time at spring training. So I think the indications were clearly there that he was not in the same good health that he has been all of these years. So obviously the first thought is with his family and the people that knew him best, and just the adjustments that they'll make feeling this loss and moving forward with their lives, you know, carrying the weight of that loss. And that is, you know, that's where I think most of the attention should be there. But that said, you know, there have been some wonderful things written about Red and written about the impact that he's had. And that's what's so interesting to me. I mean, clearly his baseball career is so far removed from me personally as a baseball fan, that one, I don't know nearly enough. I feel like I wish I knew more about his actual baseball career with the Cardinals. But what's so interesting to me is this incredible legacy that he built over the course of his life, and the way that he seems to have impacted people with the smallest of things and the littlest of details. And those are the stories that people keep mentioning. Those are the conversations that stand out in the minds of the people that did know him, or even the people that just had the opportunity to perhaps meet him at spring training, and that was the extent of their interaction with Red. It's just, I think it's so telling about who a person is and how they live their life when there are generations of baseball fans that just are in awe of the impact that he's had on people all across the various stages of his life. I felt like there was a really impactful image on the Cardinals Fox Sports Midwest broadcast the next day, and it was, you know, people were bringing flowers and photos and memorabilia out to the statue out in front of the stadium, and it was just the range of ages of people who were standing there, really obviously touched by the circumstance and the moment. It was such a powerful visual that, you know, these kids that have no idea who Red Shandies was as a baseball player and may have very little idea who he was as far as, you know, specifics in the way that he invested in the St. Louis Cardinals over the years, they know that Red mattered and that he was significant and that his life had so much meaning to so many people. And I think that's so remarkable when a person can live their life in such a way that that's the response from people who knew them personally and people who never were, you know, in the same room or even across the street from them.
Yeah, it's amazing to some degree. And again, we tell good stories about people that live a long time at times, and you don't speak ill of the dead, but you see people like Stan Musial and Red Shandies, who are both, even while they're alive, considered, you know, amazing human beings,
right.
And then lived a long life, were, you know, so associated with the Cardinals, to have one of those kind of people in your life or in your organization is something, but to have two and more probably, I mean, we're really focused on these two, to have at least two like this,
yeah.
Just is incredible. I don't, you know, you'd like to say that has something to do with the Cardinals picking good people, but I don't know that it goes that far. It's just, you know, maybe it's just the luck of the draw, but it's also probably not a surprise that those two were very good friends, and lived their baseball lives and regular lives together, for most of it. So it's tough, like you said, especially on the families who, again, I'm sure they saw it coming. Like you said, he missed opening day. He missed that recent reunion of the 68 team. And I hope that most of them had a chance to, you know, to go see him while he was there, or while they were in town or whatever. Even though you know it's coming, it doesn't necessarily make it a whole lot easier, to miss out on a personality.
Absolutely.
Like that. So we wish them the best. We look forward to telling and hearing Reg Shandy stories for a long, long time. So, you know, that's pretty much the worst thing that can happen to an organization, right? You know,
yeah.
You look at this week. So it kind of puts everything else somewhat into perspective. It was still a terrible week. you know, Alex Reyes goes out with a lat strain that requires surgery. That means he's gone for the year. Ryan Sheriff, does his
Surprise!
Instagram thing, and Tara finds out that, hey, guess what? He's got Tommy John surgery. Which was kind of news to everybody, including the organization, although maybe not as much as we thought at the time. We saw two losses to the Marlins. We saw Carlos Martinez pitch today and walk everybody, including the beer vendor that was sitting next to, you know, at home plate, around home plate. I don't really know where even to start. Let's start with Reyes. I guess that's probably the biggest impact overall. Reyes tore, you know, he apparently felt something in Memphis. It didn't tell anybody. My personal feeling is it didn't really matter if he told anybody or not. I don't think he, you know, I think that damage was kind of done. He probably, you know, he was going to eventually have that happen to him after all that. But does that raise that question? I know that Mike Matheny got asked it somewhat, of how do you communicate and how do you make sure that the players are communicating what they actually feel versus what they think you want to hear?
I mean, that's the million-dollar question, right? If teams could get players to honestly evaluate themselves, I think it would change a lot of the way that they handle the health of their players. This is not exclusive to Alex Reyes. I mean, we've seen Adam Wainwright do some similar things. We've seen in the past, you know, a number of guys who play through things that perhaps they shouldn't play through. I mean, you know, we found out that Lance Lynn was injured for most of a season at the end of the season when suddenly he was having surgery. And all of a sudden, all these red flags from previous moments throughout the year start to pop up and you're thinking, oh, all of that makes sense now. You know, we have sort of, I don't know that joked is the right word because it's really not funny, but we've sort of continued this conversation about the fact that, you know, with Trevor Rosenthal, we saw him really hit a wall and then continue to be run out there and run out there and run out there. And the response is, well, he just has to work through it. He just has to get it going. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh no, actually the reason that he's terrible is because he's been hurt for 3.5 weeks. So, you know, there's something to the way that they go about determining the health of a player. However, Mike Matheny's right. The medical staff, the coaching staff, the front office can't be expected to read the minds of these players or to look at a guy throwing a bullpen session and think, oh, you know, that looks different than it did 4 days ago. What's wrong? Oh, well, then the player says nothing's wrong. I guess nothing's wrong. I mean, there's a little bit of a back and forth there that has to happen, and some transparency that has to be there on the part of the athletes, or no one's gonna win, right? You can't, a player can't just necessarily will an injury to not be real, and a coaching staff or a medical staff can't help prevent those injuries from becoming worse if the player isn't clear about something that might feel a little bit abnormal. Now, as far as Alex Reyes is concerned, I can only assume that what he apparently felt in the Memphis start was noticeable enough that he thought it was unusual and just chose not to say something, because the alternate option there is that while something might have felt different than it did the day before, maybe he didn't think it was that serious. Maybe he thought he was just a little sore. Maybe he thought he hadn't thrown, five consecutive starts in over a year. So maybe it was there and it was noticeable, but not enough that he thought it was actually something wrong. So, you know, I'm not suggesting that we suddenly flip the script and are angry at Alex Reyes for not being honest about what he's feeling. I think it's a bit more complicated than that. There's a weird gray area in the middle there that's really hard to predict. It's really hard to manage. It's really hard to figure out what to do with. You know, I would love for the silver lining to this Alex Reyes situation to be that this becomes a bit of a precautionary tale in the way that players communicate their well-being and the way that, you know, maybe the medical staff evaluates these guys, or how the organization does or doesn't push someone back from injury. And the thing is, they didn't really push Alex Reyes back from injury. They definitely took their time. This was just a thing that either got missed or, as some have pointed out, it was a thing, and like you said, was likely to happen anyway because of the specifics of his pitching mechanics. And without changing that, this was an injury that was sort of bound to happen at some point or another. So it's a completely devastating, and I use that word with, I don't know, a grain of salt, because it's baseball. It's not like, you know, the end of the world. But for Alex Reyes and the work that he put in to get back to this point, and quite honestly, how much progress he had made as a competitor and as an athlete and as a professional, as well as the pitching specifics and the amazing things we saw in his rehab starts, it's just so demoralizing to see this as the result for Alex Reyes after just that one start that was, quite honestly, mediocre. Because he was dealing with an injury that no one had really discussed at that point. So the end of the 2018 Alex Reyes story is just so incredibly disappointing. But I think the more concerning thing is, how does the entire Alex Reyes story end at this point? Because back-to-back years with season-ending injuries, it's hard to imagine Reyes ever living up to the potential that was once there now that this is a major part of his story.
Yeah, I mean, you see so many times, it feels like to me in baseball, that there's a prospect that comes up, or a player that maybe even makes an impact on the major league scene, and he does so, and you're like, this guy is going to be so amazing. This is going to be, sky's the limit, kind of like Strasburg. Strasburg coming up was like, this guy's going to win like 18 Cy Youngs and, win a World Series every year and stuff like that. I mean, in baseball, and injuries and things always seem to find a way to get to those guys and make it what could have been. And Reyes feels like it's the most recent one of those that you're right. When he comes back after not pitching 2 years, I mean, do you put him in the rotation? Do you start to transition him to a bullpen arm? And if he becomes a bullpen arm, yes, we're all enamored with Jordan Hicks and how he can throw, but he throws, hopefully, an inning every 2 or 3 days. We'll get to that in a little bit. But, how much of an impact can that have versus a guy that can go out there and give you 6 or 7 innings every 5 days and do it at a very high level? That's what we expect. That's what we want to see out of Alex Reyes. And unfortunately, it's difficult to know. I mean, maybe he will, but, you know, he's going to have to be, you know, monitored and watched through next season, even if he is a starter, because he hasn't pitched for 2 years. You can't go out there and expect him to throw 150 innings next year without that kind of, you know, with that kind of loss. So it is hard to know what that future holds for Reyes now, now that things are absolutely not what he wanted to see, not what we wanted to see. But yeah, you know, everybody immediately started to try to point fingers and point blame, but I just don't see it here. Everybody saw a decline on the game that, you know, in Milwaukee, but Matheny went out there with the trainer, you know, and they pulled him soon after. You know, what else are you supposed to do? It was kind of like you said, we saw Tejomo Zalok last year at Blogger Day, and somebody said something about Cecil and was he hurt, and Tejomo Zalok basically said, he says he's fine. That's about all we can do, you know, without some other kind of backup, without some sort of, you know. Now, I think nowadays you see that with velocity drops and with, you know, maybe, I don't know, with spin rate, you'd have to ask Zach. But there are some underlying statistics that you can start looking and saying, maybe there's something here. Maybe there is an injury, you know, that they're not telling us about. But other than that, yeah, you kind of have to, and then you have to hope that the player knows what's the difference between an injury and what's something normal.
Yeah.
Because you look at J.D. Drew. I mean, when you talk about people that, you know, were open and honest with whatever they felt like, you know, J.D. might sit out with a hangnail that some people thought. But there's that, because you have to walk that line, because if you're a guy that sits out all the time, then you've got to get tough. You've got to be able to pitch through some of this stuff. But as soon as you start pitching through some of this stuff and blow his arm out, then people are like, why didn't you tell us? I don't know that there's a really good winning situation for athletes in this situation.
Yeah, I mean, you never want your competitiveness to be questioned. And we all know we've seen plenty of that in the last week. Sure. So I can't blame anyone for wanting to, you know, put themselves in a situation. And not only as far as the fans are concerned, but you don't want your teammates questioning your desire to compete. You don't want, you know, the people, the powers that be that ultimately determine your job, to think that you don't have what it takes to, you know, to fight and to battle and to, as Mike Matheny loves to say, grind through some of those more difficult days. And quite frankly, you know, these are professional athletes, and a lot of professional athletes will tell you that guys play hurt a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just, it sort of comes with the territory when what you're doing as a job requires extraordinary physical feats on a daily basis. So yes, they're in better condition than the average human being, but you know, these things still, you don't throw 100 miles an hour and not, you know, feel a little sore sometimes. But to your point, there's a difference in being sore and in being injured. Mm-hmm. And it's, yeah, I having never experienced a frayed tendon in the lat area, I can't tell you what that feels like or what the difference is between maybe feeling like you tweaked a muscle and feeling like you tore something. So yeah, it's really easy to say he should have said something, but it's also really easy to say to a guy who, you know, is quote day to day with something that seems insignificant that he really needs to just battle through it and be like Yachty. But we all know that's not a fair level of assessment or comparison. So I don't know. It's like I said, I would like to think that they'll learn something about this process, both on the part of the players and the communication that's never really been a strong suit for this organization, but also in the way that they go about trying to, you mentioned Zach, we've talked a little bit about this pitching lab that the Cardinals are going to be building and implementing. You'd like to think that maybe they'll be a little more perceptive about some of these mechanics issues that can directly lead to injuries. And they can go about either, you know, making the those changes early on in someone's career, or you know, being specific about how they train these athletes to manage some of those things once they are constantly in a position where they can study that a little bit more closely. That's one of the incredible things about you know, this new wave of technology in baseball, is that all of that information is available. You know, it's just a matter of putting it to good use. So that, I guess, if there's a silver lining, I would hope that with someone that has as much talent and had such a high ceiling like Alex Reyes, and someone that the Cardinals really invested a lot of their expectations for the future in, I would hope that they would be able to take something from this and apply it going forward in a way that helps, you know, avoid the same pitfalls for other pitchers. You know, I don't know. It's the Cardinals do one thing well consistently, and that is, obtain pitching. However, I feel like this injury to Alex Reyes, and as we were talking about his future, in the grand scheme of things, I think the Cardinals were in a position where they could absorb one missed season of Alex Reyes and not feel that too badly. If Alex Reyes misses yet another season and then is never the Alex Reyes they were hoping for, it has a huge impact on the way that this team is crafted going forward. So if they can avoid similar issues, at least in the near future, as much as possible, that would be the big takeaway for me here.
Speaking of other pitchers and other issues, Mr. Ryan Sheriff posted his Tommy John recovery picture on Instagram, and our intrepid reporter Tara was able to find that and share that and find out very quickly that absolutely nobody knew anything about it, including the writers or the Cardinal organization. Now, it sounds like later on that it came out that Sheriff has gone for a second opinion, and the Cardinals knew that, and I guess the doc said, hey, while you're here, let's cut it open, which is weird, because any surgery that I have ever heard about, you have to, like, not eat for 3 days beforehand and, you know, do all this medical stuff, and apparently he just walked in, and it was like a drive-through Tommy John surgery or something, I don't know, but it was a little bit surprising, and I guess, obviously, that the Sheriff is out for the year. It's a difficult thing with the way the bullpen is not to have that option, but again, it's pitchers and injuries, and they're going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's another one that's just a tough blow for Ryan, who has, he's another one of those guys that, man, he's been through it to try to get his chance at the major league level, and he's had a little bit of success once he did make it to St. Louis, and you know, he, there was a time, I don't remember exactly the details, but there was a time there where, you know, you have to put guys on the 40-man to protect them later on the season. They didn't put Ryan Sheriff in that spot. And, you know, he felt, I think, a little slighted by that because of the work that he'd put in. He ended up staying with the Cardinals, and then making his big league debut. We all know the story about last spring training where he was in big league spring training and didn't have a car, so Adam Wainwright provided a car for him. I mean, there's so much to the Ryan Sheriff story that it makes it so easy to root for the guy. But he also provided a really important role for this team. I mean, you look at the left-handed options for the Cardinals out of the bullpen. I mean, good luck finding one. At this point, it feels like Austin Gomber is it.
Yeah.
But, you know, Ryan Sheriff could have, and he did. He had some time with that role, and he was fine until he broke his toe on a line drive right back at the mound. And then it sort of, that was the end of the Ryan Sheriff experiment, at least initially, and then turns out that was the least concerning injury of the year for him. So it's, just another tough blow. I mean, the pitching picture for the Cardinals right now is, pretty rough. And, you know, someone like Sheriff could have definitely made an impact in this bullpen that is anything but positively predictable at this point.
Yeah, it was... Yeah, they keep talking about you could never have enough pitching. I really wish that once in a while that would not be true. But that seems to be the case. You do look at what the Cardinals have gone through. With Sheriff's out, Tyler Lyons is now on the DL with some sort of elbow sprain that apparently won't need surgery, but probably eventually will, just because that's the way things go. You have Brett Cecil, who's still not good. And you're getting Austin Gomber into these situations. And, you know, the first, it's difficult to know what this is going to get out of Austin Gomber. Obviously, he's talented, but he's also been a starter his whole entire career. And that kind of leads us to a question that we got on Twitter tonight when Tara went out trolling for hot take possibilities. You know, should we go through a lot of the starting pitcher options at Memphis and try to find another Jordan Hicks, a guy that can turn into a reliable bullpen piece? Now, the Cardinals have already started to do this. Connor Green, who came over in the the Grantel Grichuk trade. It's so many Cardinals are in Toronto these days, you have to try to, including Preston Gilmett, which the less said about the better. But anyway, Connor Green has been starting in Springfield. They moved him to the bullpen at Springfield and then moved him to Memphis, which makes it feel like he's on the Trevor Rosenthal path of going into the bullpen and probably be in St. Louis very soon. Hey, Tara, I don't know. I really hate seeing them continuing to convert starting pitching options into relievers, but at least this year it feels like that's the only way they're going to get these guys up to the big leagues.
Yeah, you know, the thing about having an enormous pitching pool, I guess, as far as your options, is that we've talked about this before. They can't all be pitching out of the starting rotation in St. Louis. Hence Jordan Hicks likely moving to the bullpen this season. And then, you know, we can talk a little bit more about that as well, but doing a great job at the role he's been asked to play. While the future of that role is a little bit undetermined. I think that you can do the using a minor league starter as a reliever thing in the short term without getting too complicated in changing the game plan for those guys moving forward. However, as you mentioned with Austin Gomber, as we've seen with some other guys, when that's not what they've been doing, it's not necessarily an apples to apples comparison. It's not necessarily something that just because you can get guys out as a starter, you're going to be equally as effective as a reliever. So, there's a process there, which I imagine is why someone like Green is being moved into that role now ahead of a promotion to St. Louis. But the Cardinals are missing enough pieces in that bullpen that it's not a situation where they should just go out and make a trade for a reliever and that's going to solve everything. There are too many holes right now to be filled externally, and we all know how John Mozeliak feels about internal options anyway. So I expect to see some of these guys get a chance, but, you know, to continue the bad news about Cardinals pitching, Ryan Helsley went on the DL this week, and he was one of those guys that was right at the top of the list as far as potential options to come up and slide into that bullpen right away. Obviously, Kyle Reese is the guy to talk to about these minor league pitchers, but I love the option of someone like Ponce de Leon, partly because I think it's one of the most incredible stories in baseball right now, coming off of that horrific injury last year, where, you know, he was in the hospital with essentially a brain injury for weeks and now is back, not only back on a mound professionally, but doing so at a level where he legitimately deserves a look for a major league spot. I mean, I think it's it's just incredible as far as the story goes. But I also think that, you know, he's had enough success and he's done so consistently that, you know, he's a guy that makes sense to give an option or to give a look to as, you know, one of those bullpen options for the Cardinals. But, you know, they're eventually going to run out of guys that they can just slide into that role, and they're going to have to make some legitimate, more long-term decisions. You know, do they just keep trying out these starters and hope that someone else takes off like Jordan Hicks has? I don't think so. I was talking to somebody when I was doing a Brewers preview this year. I believe it was Kyle Lishneski, who writes for Brew Crew Ball. That's so hard for me to say every time. I nailed the last name that has like 45 letters.
I never but
I can't say Brew Crew Ball. I don't know. But anyway, we were talking early in the season about the role that Josh Hader has played. And there were some questions at the beginning of the year about the fact that the Brewers seemed to be slotting him into this relief role when there was a good chance he could have been a starter. And I found really interesting his perspective on that in saying that, you know, what Josh Hader does at its best plays so well in the role that they've asked him to play now. So could he be a legitimate major league starter? Absolutely. But does he have more value as a sort of middle to the back end rotation starter or as this elite unhittable reliever who can play that Andrew Miller role and actually do it well over the course of a season, not just sort of as this, you know, novelty that we see in the playoffs. And it seems like they've decided, and probably rightfully so, that to have a guy who can absolutely shut down a lineup for two innings in almost every appearance that he has on the season is an incredible asset. So I say all of that to say that I think what I see some parallels, and I don't know, people get angry about a lot of things these days, so they might get angry about this, but I see a lot of similarities in the way that a guy like Jordan Hicks could be used, much like Josh Hader has been for the Brewers. I think there are obviously some natural concerns about transitioning someone who's been a starter to a relief role and doing that with someone who's super young and doesn't have all the experience and the innings built up and trying not to absolutely destroy their arm in the process. But I see some parallels in the way that the skill set those two guys have, those two guys being Hicks and Hader, can translate into this incredibly powerful relief role. And the way that baseball is trending as far as, you know, starters not going so deep into games, I think that can be as valuable as a starting pitcher who goes out there every 5 days. So the Cardinals have a lot of starting pitching options. I think you will see some of them end up in the bullpen. I think that what Jordan Hicks has the potential to become, whether it's as the quote unquote closer or just as that sort of super reliever who you can put into the critical moments of a game, and be confident that he's going to be able to get out of it. I don't think they'll do that with all of those starters. I think you can only get away with that with certain guys who have a certain mindset and a certain skill set. And the rest of them, you're going to need that starting pitching to come in and back you up when, injuries do happen. So that was a very long-winded answer. That was sort of just me like workshopping that question as I went through it. I don't know if any of that made sense, but I think that while we might see some of these young guys get a shot this year just because the bullpen is so decimated and needs so much help, I wouldn't expect the Cardinals to make any snap decisions about most of that starting pitching talent at Memphis becoming exclusively relievers moving forward.
And that lets us transition. We're running a bit long, but there are a couple more things we need to touch on. And that lets us transition to one of those, and that is the fact that Jordan Hicks pitched yesterday for the third straight day through 20-something pitches. I think he had thrown 11 and 17 the 2 days before. He's back out there for a third day now. lots of stories today about how they're continuing to manage their workload and how Jordan Hicks says he's fine. Because that's
stop
never,
me if you've heard this before.
Yeah, that's never blown up in your face at all. And I mean, again, there are not a whole lot of really great options. I mean, if you want to put somebody out there to save the game when Bud Norris isn't available, then but Jordan Hicks shouldn't have been available too. I mean, that's just what it boils down to. In my mind, I get all the permutations and the bullpen's not good and you gotta be careful, but you know, what good does it do you to go out and win a game against the Reds in June if in a week you have to put Jordan Hicks on the DL? Because now again, 3 days in a row, one time is not going to probably cause too much damage, but it's that mindset, like you were talking about earlier, or I think it was before we started recording, but you know, at the beginning of the year, they wouldn't think about putting Jordan Hicks in back-to-back games, no matter how many innings he went. You know, if he only went one inning and threw 10 pitches, he wasn't pitching the next day. He was pitching, it was later on. And as the season's progressed, and of course as the bullpen has continued to, you know, bring out their gas cans, that caution seems to have gone out the window. And I don't know, I find it somewhat troubling, because yes, the Cardinals have a lot of pitching, but we've also seen how fast the Cardinals can go through that pitching. You know, if something happens to Jordan Hicks, and it may not happen this season, but we've seen, I mean, it's not like there's not a huge track record of what Mike Matheny can do to pitchers. Mr. Bowman and Mr. Rosenthal and others.
Segrist.
Kevin Segrist.
Seth Maness.
Yeah. I mean, you could almost, well, Mitchell Boggs really didn't fall into that. He just kept trying to use Mitchell Boggs.
Right. He didn't actually ruin Mitchell Boggs. Yeah. He just
kept using
forced,
him after he was.
Yeah.
Around. Yeah. But there's, I mean, it's, you know, again, if Mike Matheny had a really good reputation with pitchers and something like this happens and you say, okay, maybe there's a reason, maybe it's a one-off, whatever. What I get concerned about is that you're going to see a lot more of this. A lot more of these games where he goes out and throws 20 pitches and is out the next day. Or, you know, he goes two innings one day and an inning the next because there's no other options, or at least that's not what it feels like. I don't know. I mean, am I kind of doom and glooming this? Is this just over the top?
I mean, I think that's only fair when you look at the track record to sort of feel a little bit anxious about someone with the potential, especially that Jordan Hicks has, someone with the inexperience that Jordan Hicks has, not only taking on this massive role with the team, but doing, sort of becoming the Matt Bowman or the Seth Maness, right? The guy that, whether he should or shouldn't be available, is the first call. He has the most appearances of any of the relievers for the Cardinals this year. He has the most innings pitched for any of the relievers for the Cardinals this year. And while he's been tremendously successful most of that time, and it's been fascinating to watch him learn how to be that reliever at the major league level. I think it's an incredible experiment that hopefully continues to go well, knock on wood. But I do think that there's reason to be a little bit hesitant. Now, I would like to believe that Mike Maddux has a little bit of pull. However, we thought that he was going to make some dramatic changes most of the year, and all too often we see the same thing that we've seen for the last 5 years from Mike Matheny. So I don't know how much influence he really has over the decision to use or not to use Jordan Hicks. Mm-hmm. I think much like the situation with Matt Bowman last year or even Seth Maness the year before, if the bullpen had a little more stability, if there were some actual other legitimate options, this wouldn't be such an issue because Mike Matheny would have other guys that he could trust in those big situations, that he could trust to get outs. And, you know, we've seen at times where Tui seems to become that guy. We've seen at times where Brebbia was actually pretty solid. He's struggled a little bit as of late, and that makes this picture a little bit more complicated. But when you have a bullpen full of guys that you don't actually trust to get outs, you basically come up with Bud Norris and Jordan Hicks. And, you know, you have to... You walk a really weird line where you are sometimes forced into decisions that you don't really want to make because of the particular circumstances of the day. The other side of that is if the offense would ever decide to join the party, they wouldn't be so worried about giving up a single run or two at the end of games. But all of that said, I don't think you're crazy for worrying about Jordan Hicks. Because of the track record that this team seems to have with burning guys out because they become that trustworthy arm for Mike Matheny. And that's great. But, you know, Jordan Hicks is too good to only get 1 year out of his ability. And especially if they see him becoming this sort of hater type reliever, I mean, that's a tremendous asset that he could be for this team, but you have to protect it. You can't, you know, just run it out there one season and see what happens, and then all of a sudden he has arm issues for the rest of his career. So I don't know that there's a really easy answer to that other than sometimes you're going to just have to bite the bullet and let him sit and take whatever happens from the other guys that are out there. Or if you get a little more creative in the way that you use those guys and try to will them through some of those innings that you would like to see Hicks in, but you just can't day after day after day. But Mike Matheny doesn't do creativity well, so I'm not sure that's really an option either.
True. And, you know, again, some of that is if everybody was like Miles Michaelis who could go seven innings, then you wouldn't have as much of this issue.
Right.
Because there have been some short starts and there's been some ugly starts. I mean, you saw Jed Jerko pitch this week.
I've completely forgotten about that until just now.
Technically, awesome. I didn't see him. I heard about it. But still, the point holds that, you know, it got down. And that's something that Mike Matheny doesn't like to do, but it got down to they just weren't covering the innings.
Can we just pause there for a second and talk about the fact that his evidently fastball was so slow that all of the pitch trackers were classifying it as a changeup. Let's just give it that. Anyway, that was incredibly entertaining and a terrible game, but yeah. That's all I have to say.
Also, he was probably throwing faster than Adam Wainwright was at the end of last season, so. just for reference. But anyway.
And you said you didn't have hot takes.
Just stating the facts, unfortunately. And speaking of just stating the facts, our last topic for the night, we tend to do this. We spend all the time talking about the pitching. We never actually even talk about the offense, which probably because they don't ever do anything. But, Carlos Martinez. Pitches, he came off the DL this week and has made two starts, including today. We saw him pitch against the Marlins, four innings, five walks, four hits in that period of time. He's kind of got a lot of double plays and got out of some jams, but didn't quite look like Carlos Martinez, and afterwards said he was holding back because he was worried about his arm. He was worried about another strain. Then today, 3.2 innings against the Reds, seven walks in less than four innings. I mean, he only gave up four hits, but why would you ever swing the bat when somebody is walking seven times? Gives up five runs, in this one. It's concerning, you know, again, you mentioned it last week, I believe, where, you know, we talked about the fact that the Cardinal pitchers have come off the DL, made a start, gone right back on the DL. And Carlos Martinez hasn't done that yet, but I don't know. I mean, it feels like there's got to be something wrong because that's just not what you expect to see out of Carlos Martinez. Even that start against the, and I guess that start against the Mets earlier in the year was a similar type of situation, but back-to-back bad outings where he can't find the plate, that's got to worry some people.
Yeah, so two things about this. We've seen this out of Carlos Martinez before. There were times last year where I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was like there was a game where I think he like walked 9 and struck out 11 or something bizarre like that. So it's not like 8. Carlos Martinez. Is that what it was?
He walked 8, struck out 11 against,
there it is.
Against
there it
the
is.
Yankees early in the year. That
yeah.
Yeah.
One of the strangest starts I've ever seen in my life. But, you know, we've seen this from Carlos Martinez where he takes a little while to find it. I'm not shocked that we've seen this in back-to-back starts from him coming off of more than one missed start time on the DL. Because, you know, we saw that a little bit this spring. He put in a ton of extra work on the backfields this spring. And then it carried over into that first start on opening day. And then once he finds it, he seems to be able to, kind of work in and out of those rougher innings without losing it again. So there's on one side of this, I can see, you know, this is Carlos Martinez fighting it a little bit to get back into that normal routine, the normal rhythm, finding his normal mechanics again, and really just sort of reining in all of the moving parts that go with his delivery. That said, his comments after that first start have had me extremely concerned about what his actual physical condition is, because we talked about this as it pertained to Alex Reyes and other athletes in general who don't want to acknowledge any sort of weakness. For Carlos Martinez to come out and basically say, yeah, I made this start, but I wasn't really sure if I was healthy or not, is absolutely terrifying to me, because on so many levels, yes, it's one thing if a guy doesn't tell you that he thinks something is wrong. If there's any possibility, and I said this today during the game, and I'm happy to reiterate it, if there's any indication, if there's any concern that there might still be some lingering issue physically with Carlos Martinez, for Mike Matheny to leave him out there as long as he did is absolutely incredibly irresponsible. If it's not a physical thing, if there's no concern, if they talked to Carlos after that first start and he realized, no, it was just a mental thing where, you know, I really wanted to be out there so much that I was worried because of what I felt the last time and I was trying to make sure that whatever, that's fine. If they came to the conclusion that while he may have been concerned about it, the end of the day, there was really nothing to be worried about, then fine. Maybe he was just struggling to find it. Like I said, I sort of expected. However, if there was any indication, if there was any concern that he could re-injure something or that he was worried about whatever the physical condition was, there was absolutely no reason for him to be out there, especially as long as he was, especially struggling like he was. I don't often go to the "this is a fireable offense" level with Mike Matheny, but I was there today with Carlos Martinez watching him struggle, because it's one thing for him to just struggle. It's another thing if there is this lingering concern about his health for the Cardinals to knowingly put him out there in a situation where there's a possibility of re-injuring or re-aggravating the same injury. And that's a line or a situation we may never have an answer to, but I share the concern because of the reaction of Carlos Martinez after that start. And that led me to be a little more irritated with the way he was used today.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I didn't get a chance to see the game today, but yeah, when you're throwing, but you know, that's other, as it kind of ties back to what we're talking about earlier. And unfortunately, it goes back to not having any bullpen options, and not only, I mean, bullpen options. I mean, Brett Cecil throws two innings in this game, which is not what you want to see out of Brett Cecil. Though he did, for the most part, okay, till this, I guess the first inning at least, maybe the second inning was a little iffy. Just, you know, they've gone through so many arms over the last few days that I'm sure they wanted to get as much out of Carlos as they could. But again, that tends to run the risk of getting somebody hurt. And you know, I don't know. I mean, we've talked all year about how they don't really need 13 pitchers. Well, apparently they do, because as soon as they don't have them,
all the pitchers.
as soon as they don't have them, they seem to, you know, it's that kind of thing. As soon as they get 13 pitchers, they're going to have a stretch where all the starters go seven, and somebody's going to sit around in the bullpen not being used for a week. But yeah. As soon as you send them down, then everything goes and blows up on them. So I don't know that there's a whole lot of ways that the Cardinals can win here. Although, and I'm assuming, I see Mike Myers just went one in a third inning. I'm assuming that's because he's pitched a lot lately. Although not too late, too much lately since he hasn't been here. He pitched the night before through an inning. So I guess that's part of it too. It is interesting to see how people are used. And it's really weird to see a game where the opponent gets five hits and you get 11 and it's not really a close game. But that happens when you walk 11 batters. I'm not sure that Cincinnati even brought their bats today. Why would they? Anyway, that's, we could go on for a long time talking about all the things that went wrong this week. I think we've probably done enough damage, so far. Hopefully, you know, if things go well this week, then we'll just save some of this for next week, you know, to even out. Because if we ever have a show where we talk just a whole bunch of happy, positive things, and you just imagine how bad it will be after that. So, we'll even it out with some other stuff. We'll talk about the offense next week, and hopefully maybe we'll talk about a resurgent offense. You know, there are signs, there are times, but then there's a whole lot of struggle as well there. So, but we won't keep you. We thank you for your listening. And for Tara, I'm Daniel. Good night.
Hey, Cardinals fans. Thanks for listening to this week's show. If you liked what you heard, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Gateway to Baseball Heaven under podcasts and click subscribe. While you're there, feel free to give us 5 of those little gold stars or even a quick review. And tune in next time as we break down another week in baseball heaven.